problems. So this is a recall from last week. Our equation one is I want to solve Laplacian u equals zero in a domain. So this is for all x in some domain, and I'm going to make that an n-dimensional domain. So this is a domain, and generally that means an open set. And often, I think there's a lot of traffic, so it's hard to travel today. If you have two disconnected components of your domain, you might as well solve two different problems, so it might as well be connected. And then when we get technical, probably we're going to ask for smooth boundary, but let's not ask that at the moment. So maybe I'll say, let me see if I can say something. I have to integrate by parts and use Green's theorem. That's not true for all boundaries of all open sets. I'll just say that being able to integrate by parts is what makes it called a domain, and I'll say nothing further. That's for the cognoscenti. If somehow it hasn't sparked a difference in your mind, then don't care about that until later. Okay? And this is the Dirichlet problem. So number one was our Dirichlet problem, which is I want to assign u of x to some data for x in the boundary of the domain. And that's the Dirichlet data. Our problem two was kind of similar. Laplacian u is equal to, but not zero. I wanted to solve an inhomogeneous problem in the domain. And then I wanted to set x to be something, but it might as well be zero on the boundary, if I can also solve problem one. And then problem three, I'm going to squeeze them all. Maybe I won't squeeze them in here. Problem three was the Neumann problem. So this is called the Poisson problem. And problem three was the Neumann problem, which is Laplacian u is equal to zero. So u is a harmonic function in our domain of interest. And then I don't want to assign values for u, but I want to assign values for the normal derivative of u when x is in the boundary. Okay? And we had spent last session talking mostly about what happens when we solve in the upper half space. And now I'm going to talk a little bit more in general. That's my theme for today. I forgot to make an announcement in the beginning, which is there's an inverse problem symposium starting today at Fields Institute for 4 days. Very interesting problem, very interesting talks. I couldn't negotiate that they start after 12:30. So it starts at 11:30. It started at 11:30 in this room. So we're having a one-hour lecture today rather than two or two and a half. Hope you don't mind. If you were Calvin and Hobbes, you'd be delighted. And I recommend, if you're still feeling need for intellectual stimulus, have a break, come back, and listen to the introductory talk on inverse problems. That's what I'm going to do. Good. So I want to start today by talking about Green's identities. Which are, I want to consider, which actually have a priori, they are integration by parts formulae in vector analysis, and therefore are second year undergraduate things. I'm going to write them down anyway. And a priori have nothing to do with the Dirichlet problem. We're going to use them when we solve the Dirichlet problem. But otherwise, they are integrations by parts formulae. So in order to do that nicely, I want to have two functions to work with, u of x and v of x, and I want them to be twice differentiable up to the boundary. Or if you want me to be a little slightly more notationally technical, all I need is one derivative up to the boundary. So I want it two derivatives inside, but maybe only one derivative being continuous on the boundary. And then let's integrate by parts. So I'm going to say I want to integrate over the domain v Laplacian u dx. That's a volume integral. And that's equal to, if I integrate one of these derivatives of the Laplacian by parts, it's equal to minus the integral over the domain of grad v dot grad u dx. Right? That's by integration by parts. Is that right? There's a boundary term. Plus an integral over the boundary. And that is v normal derivative of u d surface area or surface volume of the boundary. Okay? So that's Green's first identity. So that's 1, 2, and 3. Then this is our equation 4 of the day. And let's do it one more time. So iterate. But to tell you the truth, if you're lazy and don't like integrating by parts, or if you're a group theorist, you'd symmetrically interchange u and v and subtract this formula from the other formula you got from doing that, and you'd find, that means just do this twice, you'd find that the integral over omega of v Laplacian u dx can also be written as integral over omega of Laplacian v times u dx, and then plus this boundary integral that this we get from our first integration by parts, but then you get another boundary integral from the second integration by parts, which puts the second derivative onto u, so it means the second derivative on v from u, and that comes with a minus sign because you, so that's the normal derivative of v u d surface area. And I want you to note that, note a similarity with a Wronskian identity in ODE. That is, when one studies Sturm-Liouville problems, there's often a Wronskian identity that you prove when you integrate by parts second order Sturm-Liouville problems, and this is the PDE analog, so you can say that that's a specialization of this, so to speak. So let's use this. So use number one. And what we're going to do is we're going to take u in general. I'm going to take my favorite v, my second favorite v, because my first favorite v is, of course, 0. And then I have on the left hand, I'm going to use one of these identities, and I'm going to say the integral of Laplacian u dx over the domain, so Laplacian u times 1 dx is equal to, this has a gradient of 1, which is 0, and this has 1 times the normal derivative, so that's equal to integral of the boundary of the normal derivative of u d surface area. Okay? And we deduced something already. So this is, remember, we're numbering our formulae in theorems, so this is a proposition, which means it's not very big, but it's still nonetheless of note. 219, that's a 2. I'll make it again so it looks more handsome. 219. It says something about the Neumann problem, problem 3. So in order that the Neumann problem has a solution, the Neumann data g of x. Oh, somebody didn't catch me. What's the solution to this problem? What's another solution? 1, or the constant. I wanted to put a general g. But in order to have a solution, the Neumann data g of x must satisfy the integral. So it has a solution. So 0 is, see, this is any u, but if it's if u is harmonics, then 0 is equal to the integral of Laplacian of u, dx is equal to the normal derivative of u over the boundary, but that's supposed to be equal to integral of g over the boundary. So integral of g ds better vanish in order to satisfy the compatibility condition. All right, that's a proposition, and it's proof. That's proposition by statement, and it's proof by me finger-pointing at the line above. Right, because if this were a solution, this would be the integral of the surface of g, and this would be 0. Well, let's make it, put it to use again. Use 2. And that's, what's my second favorite? No, my third favorite choice for v. U itself, and that gives us what's called an energy identity. So V equals U always in C2 of the domain and C1 up to the boundary. So let's do this. And I'd like to use this line, I guess, which says that, this line, Green's first identity, you might say. So this line, grad u dot grad u, is the norm of the vector u squared. So grad u quantity squared, integral over the domain, dx. That's equal to something. So that's equal to minus u Laplacian u minus the volume integral of u Laplacian u dx, and then it has some other stuff, which is equal to plus the integral over the boundary of u dn u d surface area. Okay. So and then I have a proposition 220, which is that if u satisfies, so if u solves the Dirichlet problem, one, well then, let's see what we can conclude from this. This is 0. This is 0. This is positive or non-negative. And this is the following interesting quantity that it talks about my data f in the Dirichlet problem, and it also talks about a linear operator which acts on that data f and returns the Neumann data returns the normal derivative. That's called the Dirichlet-Neumann map, or the Dirichlet-Neumann operator. And so then it says that 0, because this is 0 is less than or equal to this. This is 0 is greater than or equal to integral over the boundary of u dn u ds. So it says there's something non-negative about that mapping from data to Neumann response. That mapping, incidentally, in these imaging problems, which you're going to hear in about in 40 minutes, is the mapping which takes an applied voltage on the boundary of a domain to the current response to that voltage in a stationary state. That says something about that operator. Okay? But I have a little bit more to say just using what I have on the board, and that is a theorem. So theorem 221. Maybe I'm a little too liberal with my numbers, but this seems like a very high number that I feel like we're making very slow progress. Actually, I wanted to ask, is the lecture too slow? Anybody who's not a student is not allowed to reply. Is the lecture too fast? Did I tell you about the guy at Stanford who had red cards and green cards? The Leo, he had red cards and green cards. Too slow, students raised a green card. Too fast, raised a red card. If it's half red, half green, I'm not sure what he did. Second question. The problem sets are clearly too easy. Is that a true statement? Nobody wants to speak up. I got it. Okay, I understand. Maybe they'll get harder, but at least one's doing some things. Okay? Theorem. Suppose U is in this thing. I want a C2 function, and I want to have a one derivative on the boundary. Satisfies one with F equals 0, or two with H equals 0, or three with G equals 0. Then, and this is the uniqueness theorem, then what? Then U is equal to 0, well, case 1 and 3, constant, case 2. And that's a uniqueness theorem. Well, everybody already sees that, but I'll just make sure that it's clear. It's uniqueness because suppose two solutions of this type with same data. Well, then I have U1 of x, and I have U2 of x, and they're both solutions with the same data, so their difference, which I'm going to call U of x, with no subscript, is a solution with zero data, right? If one has Laplacian U1 equals H, and the other one has Laplacian U2 equals H, then their difference has Laplacian the difference equals 0, because the H is canceled. Same with F, same with G. And so therefore, this U satisfies one of the hypotheses of Theorem 221. And then our conclusion is that U is 0. Well, you can't distinguish between constants in the Neumann problem. So our conclusion for problem 3 is that, I got this wrong, 1 and 2, because 1 and 2 are the Dirichlet problem and the Poisson problem, and in case 3, that's the Neumann problem. You can't distinguish between constants. You just numbered them wrong. Okay? Big statement of theorem, simple proof. Well, a medium-sized statement of theorem, simple proof, which is Green's identities again. Integral of U, this U squared, and this U is going to be the difference squared, of course, dx, which is patently a non-negative quantity, plus, let's see what I'm reading off here. I'm going to use Green's first identity. So integral of this thing squared, that's a plus sign over here, plus the integral of this equals the boundary, plus the integral over a U Laplacian U dx equals the boundary term, which is the integral over the boundary U grad U ds. So equals integral of the boundary U normal derivative of U d surface area. And it solves U is harmonic because it is here and here and H is 0, so it's here. And then in this term, either U is 0, as it would be in the Dirichlet problem or the Poisson problem, or the normal derivative is U, 0, where it is with the Neumann problem. So this is also 0. So this is equal to 0. Hence, the grad U squared equals 0. So it's a function whose gradient vanishes almost everywhere. That implies the function is, almost everywhere, constant. And if it's continuous, can't help but being constant. If you evaluate it now on the boundary, in the Dirichlet problem, it has to be zero. Therefore, that constant is zero. Same for the Poisson problem. It's only in the Neumann problem that you can't make any further progress. In any case, the proof is one line. We're done. Good. I want to move on to the fundamental solution. So, didn't they give a problem set on the invariance of Laplacian under rotation? Didn't they give a problem set problem to have to do with that? Trouble is, I can't remember anyone giving me the answer back. Did anyone do that problem? Yes.
Give us one on conformal
mapping. I gave you one on conformal mapping. Is that has some? Okay. It's a simple problem. Sorry? I said it's invariant, and I didn't ask you to prove it. Now is an appropriate time. Okay. Laplacian is invariant under. I remember assigning it, I just don't ever remember correcting it on anyone's paper. That's what's why I'm hesitating. Is an invariant under translations. That is x in Rn goes to x plus a fixed constant, say q, and rotations. So the problem set, I thought it was a problem set problem one problem. Should I stick it back there, or should I say it problem set three? Problem set three, problem set four. Don't you do three today? Yeah, three is due today. Problem set number four. Show this. So, I mean, you have to figure out how differential operators transform with respect to transformations, at least these easy transformations, and then show me that. Okay, well, I wanted to use this fact. That's why it suddenly struck me. So, if Laplacian is invariant under translations and rotations, especially under rotations, there should be something special about the solutions which only depend on R. That is, the solutions which themselves are invariant under rotations. So let's write Laplacian polar coordinates, because those are coordinates which will respect rotation around zero. Never mind the translations for the moment. And that is Laplacian u, if I write u as a function of polar coordinates, is equal to dr squared plus n minus 1 upon r, partial r, u plus 1 upon r squared, Laplacian in all the phi directions, u. That's the Laplacian in polar coordinates. What are the phi? So r, where r lives this is singular at zero, well, not surprising. I want r to go to plus infinity, and I want phi to live on the n minus 1 dimensional unit sphere. Those are all my angles, and of course, some often in physics books and in math books, you coordinatize those angles somehow. Let's not bother to do that in a moment, because I'm only interested in r. Okay? Then I want to look at a function gamma of r, and I want it to be harmonic. So I'd like to solve Laplacian of gamma equals zero, at least away from the polar coordinate singularity at zero. So that says I want partial r squared plus n minus 1 upon 2 partial r of gamma equal to zero, which is like saying that I want partial r gamma. So this is an equation, since here's one and here's two derivatives, this is an equation for a first order equation for the derivative of gamma with respect to r, which you then iterate and say that partial r of gamma is some constant over r to the n minus 1. Because you differentiate it once, and you'll get this relation. right? N minus 1 over R. Thanks. I wrote a 2, I said an R, I think. I didn't say anything. I wrote a 2, I didn't say anything. Yes? What about linear terms? That is a problem. I'm going to say, it's not a problem here. It's the next step that is a problem, and I'm going to say, oops, let's throw them out. It's the constant of integration. So if this is the R derivative, that says that gamma of R itself, modulo throwing out the constant I just told you to throw out. Actually, you can add lots of other terms, but I want to say a solution, which is important to us, is the integral of this. So that's C. We integrate this in R over R to the n minus 2, and then there's a 2 minus n. And that's true if n is not equal to 2, so n greater than or equal to 3. N equals 1 is an ODE class, so that's last year or next year, but not this year. If n were equal to 2, I would integrate this c over r, and I would get a log, so c log r. That's an important function. In particular, in particular, it's when n is 3, that's an important space for us, because we're not string theorists, at least not yet, and therefore, that's called the Newton potential. That's the potential whose gradient gives us gravitational attraction, or electromagnetic attraction, for that matter. So dates to Newton. That's coming. Yeah, that's coming. So, I guess I should have said, this is called the fundamental solution, or at least a fundamental solution. For reasons that I'm going to show you. I have to spend some time, a little time, justifying its name. So let's do I think that's appropriate to do right now. So let's do that. So this is a calculation we're going to do using Green's identity. So let's again consider an arbitrary C2 function. Never mind its boundary behavior. Oh yes, I guess we need it. So let's make sure it's C1 on the boundary. And so let me draw a picture of what we're doing, because that's always clearest. Here's our domain omega. We're inside. I've never said it's supposed to be bounded. Could be non-compact. I have to say something about infinity if it's non-compact, so let's make it bounded. It's closure non-compact, so let's make it bounded. Just to avoid further questions. I probably shouldn't have said it's bounded a while ago. And I want y to be a point inside. So y is some point. Y at some point inside. And then I want to do the following thing. I'm going to cut out a ball around Y. Small ball around Y of radius rho. Okay, so that's radius rho. And I'm going to, and now let's note that I've guaranteed that gamma, well, let's just have a look at it. I talked about everything except R is equal to zero. Clearly, gamma is gamma is perfectly smooth in phi, because any phi derivative kills it. So I mean, it's and then you have my favorite analytic function, which is zero. So it's R which is in question, but a power of R you only worry about at zero and infinity. So anywhere away from zero, it's a smooth function. I can take two derivatives. In particular, it solves Laplace's equation. So gamma is harmonic outside this ball around y of radius rho. And I want to do the following thing. Use Green's identity, but outside the ball of radius rho, but inside the domain. So I'm going to integrate gamma for v, so gamma of x minus y, then Laplacian u of x dx. And I don't want to integrate everywhere, but I want to integrate over my domain, but without the ball. And then I can integrate by parts and find stuff, right? So it's equal to the integral of, so I'm using Green's second identity, omega minus ball radius rho about y of Laplacian gamma u dx, that's the volume integral. And I just said when you stay away from zero, that's zero. Remember, it's not gamma at zero, it's gamma at x at y. As a function of x. I'm abusing notation because gamma is a function of r, so really this should be the length between them. So let me put length between them, but I'm going to let it drop because it uses so much chalk and it looks so messy on the board. So there are two functions gamma, one a function of one variable, r, and one a function of n variables, which is only a function of the length of those n variables. Okay? Then I have the boundary terms, which are plus integral over the boundary of gamma normal derivative of u minus normal derivative of gamma times u, d surface area. And, integral of the boundary. The boundary has two components. So one component is the boundary here. The other component is the boundary here. Better make that ball small enough to fit into the domain, which you can do if it's a point on the inside. So this is also plus integral over the boundary of the ball, which is a sphere. So integral over the sphere radius rho about y of the same thing, gamma normal derivative of u minus normal derivative of gamma times u ds. And now let's practice a little bit and say this is something that depends on where the domain is. So I'm just going to keep that, right? I can't talk too much further about that. But this I can, because in fact this is a nice little ball around the origin, and this is a function which only depends on the radius. So this is a constant value, and also this is going to have a constant value. Okay? So, plus, because it's the exterior normal, always. Right? Which way is the normal? That's the question. Point outside the domain, but outside happens to be inside, so to speak. Okay. I lost my train of thought. I'm calculating gamma on that boundary. So let's see. Gamma, where x minus y equals rho, I'm calculating gamma of x minus y, is, what is it again? C over 2 minus n rho to the n minus 2. So C over 2 minus n rho to the n minus 2, right? Except in n dimensions when it's C log rho, but that's a constant on that sphere. And the normal derivative of gamma, x minus y, is equal to minus the rho derivative of gamma, of rho, or minus the r derivative at r equals rho. That's what I should write, because it's the n that I drew. And that is, we fortunately didn't erase it. It's the first thing we derived, which is C over R, the N minus 1. So at rho, it's going to be minus c. We need that minus c, minus c sine rho to the n minus 1. And now, now we can work further. Barely visible, but we can work further, which is, I want to calculate now this spherical integral. I have gamma partial n u minus partial n gamma u ds. And that's going to be equal to, let's see, the first one, gamma is a constant on there. I'm just going to take it out. So it's going to be, I'll say gamma of rho times the integral over the sphere radius rho of y of partial n of u ds minus partial n gamma, which is minus a minus c over rho to the n minus 1. So it's plus c over rho to the n minus 1. That's a 1. Integral over the sphere times u ds. Isn't that right? And sorry? That's a rho. That's a rho with a sort of a curly tail on this left. I know Greek is very close to Cyrillic, so you really have to have good taste in writing those letters in front of you. Gamma of rho. Second line from the top, gamma harmonic outside that ball, which is a fact. And now I just want to say, I want to do two things to this. One is, this is gamma of rho times, this is a volume integral by integration by parts, right? So this is a volume integral over the ball by our first case of Green's identity of Laplacian u ds. And then this plus c upon rho to the n minus 1, that's a rho, dx, thanks. And this is c over rho to the n minus 1, still a surface integral, u ds. And now let me start counting powers of rho. So let's see, now we count. And we're going to count and also take. The point is to take rho to zero. So let's see. This is going to be, well, we have two cases. One, if n is greater than 2, when this is a constant, 2 minus n over rho to the n minus 2. And the other case is constant log rho times something. And that something is a volume integral of a continuous function. So in particular, that continuous function has a bound, let's say m, and the volume integral over a ball of radius rho is equal to rho to the n. So I have times either one of these. I have rho to the n times the L infinity of norm of Laplacian u times a constant, which is the volume of a ball of radius, volume of ball of radius 1 in n dimensions, which we'll call capital omega. Too many omegas, actually, on the board, because there's a domain omega. This is a different, this is a number. Okay? That's the first term. The second term is c over rho to the n minus 1. I'm going to say something about that in just a second, but let's think, what happens when rho goes to 0 in this case? Rho to the n is a lot smaller than rho to the n minus 2. So in cases where n is in 3 and higher dimensions, the limit is 0. So this is going to be 0 when I take the limit. So in the limit, rho goes to 0. This term is 0. How about log rho and rho squared for n equals 2? 0, thank you. That doesn't play a role, so it's this that plays a role. So let's think about that for a moment. It's going to be plus over rho to the n minus 1 times the surface integral of y of u ds. Now, if u is continuous at y, that means the surface integral near, when rho is very small, you're integrating over x is very near y, so that thing is going to converge to, and I'm not going to make this proof any more rigorous than this, constant over rho to the n minus 1, it's going to converge to the value of u at y times the volume, the surface integral over a sphere of radius rho. So that surface integral is the surface integral over a sphere of radius 1 times rho to the n minus 1, isn't it? That's the surface area in n dimensions of the n minus 1 sphere of radius rho. And we happily cancel, and I'll use red, just because I'm getting tired of white chalk, the rows. And so I'm going to get this whole thing equal to, in the limit, where am I? I have to reprise, because it's the longest thing I've written so far. Big omega is the domain, but big omega sub n is the volume of the ball radius 1 in n dimensions. Sorry about the too many omegas. I started up there. So I'm saying the integral over omega minus the ball radius rho about y, and I'm taking a limit as rho goes to 0 of gamma of x minus y Laplacian u of x dx, and we're computing this limit. And it had a boundary integral around the outer boundary. So integral over the outer boundary of gamma normal derivative of u minus normal derivative of gamma times u, the surface area on the outer boundary, and we're thinking about plus this other term. And I just calculated what that other term is. That's that other term, which is this blackboard, and I found this, which I'm now going to repeat for you. A constant times another constant, that's the surface area of the unit ball in n dimensions, times the value of u at y. And now I'm going to make one more modification to my statement over here. It's the fundamental solution when c is equal to 1 over omega n. Because I want to get 1 out of this calculation. I don't want to get some funny constant. So let's set that constant equals 1 over omega n. And then I can set this to 1. And it says if I integrate gamma is my fundamental solution. So integrate gamma against Laplacian u, I get u at y plus boundary terms. Okay? And so what I'd like to say is the following. So let's see. That's a result of a theorem. So this is theorem 2, and I think I'm already at 222, which is the integral over omega of gamma x minus y Laplacian u of x dx. I need u in twice differentiable, and let's keep its derivatives up to the boundary. We decided this is equal to some boundary integral on the outside, gamma dn u minus dn gamma u, d surface area, plus u of y. So u is in here, and I want y to be inside the domain. Very nice thing. Very nice thing. And we can also say something in terms. So I'd like to do the following thing, which is I'd like to now, just for the moment, momentarily, just let omega to be all of Rn. And let's pretend that u and its derivatives actually go to 0 at infinity, so I can actually take the limit. Well, let me see. I'm going to make omega into Rn by taking larger and larger balls of radius capital R, say, and I'm going to take, and what I want is u to be sufficiently well behaved so this limit on large integral on large balls goes to 0. I'm just waving my hands on the limits. But imagine, let's imagine we can make, U does that. Let's do it. Okay, it's a sufficient decay property of U when compared with the decay of gamma and its derivative, which is not out of the question. Then we can write this as saying that the integral of gamma over Rn against Laplacian U dx, this goes to zero, is equal to U. It's equal to U at Y. This is X minus Y, and this is U of X. It's equal to U of Y. And another way of writing that is it's saying this is a distributional solution to the problem. That is, the way you define the distributional Laplacian on gamma is by integrating against functions which have a certain number of derivatives. So this is like saying that the Laplacian of gamma is Laplacian in X of gamma of X minus Y is equal to the delta function Y, delta function in as a function of X evaluated at Y. That's a distribute, so it's as this interprets the fundamental solution as a distribution. So I know this is not an introduction to distributions. It's just a statement that they exist. This is interpretation. We'll read them in more detail at a later time. Oh. Now I don't have so much more time in my lecture today, unfortunately. I just should have spoken twice as fast. But let's do one more item before we quit. And that's another theorem that I can just prove by inspection, given our equipment today, 2.23, which is a harmonic function is smooth. So I'm going to say that C infinity. If I say a function is C, I've been saying a function is C2, meaning it has two continuous derivatives. C infinity means it has any number of continuous derivatives. If a harmonic function is C infinity within, that is in the interior of, within, in the interior of its domain of definition. And the proof is as follows. Let's look at omega of X minus Y. Well, it only depends on R, and to tell you the truth, it's a rational function, or a log. And just avoid R being zero, and then it's perfectly smooth. In fact, it's analytic. Well, if R were complex, it'd be analytic, but analytic functions, if you restrict them to the reals, are called real analytic. So I even could change this, if you want, to say C omega, actually, meaning real analytic. That's true of gamma, as long as you avoid X equals Y. So now, let's... So first statement is gamma is, and then the second statement is for harmonic functions, I have just written down this identity, which says gamma integrated against Laplacian U is equal to some right-hand side. Right? Sorry? Gamma is C infinity, C omega, anything you want. It's a sentence, it's a short sentence. And now I want to use theorem 2.22. So if I have U harmonic, Laplacian U equals zero, the left-hand side is zero. So that says that U, rewriting that, U of Y is equal to this boundary integral of U of X, partial N gamma at X minus Y minus partial N U of X gamma X minus Y d surface area in X. And I guess I should make this hypothesis clear, which is I really need two derivatives and one on the boundary. because I'm not doing things optimally, but I'm doing things optimally easily. And that's what I used to prove theorem, or I used something like that to prove theorem 2.22. Okay? So now I have the result of that. It says I can express u and y, a point y, inside. Here's my domain. Looks like a potato. Here's y. And now this integral here is over x's, and the x's sit on the boundary. So the integral is a sum. And so here I'm having weighted sums of a function which is clearly smooth. And this function is clearly smooth. And if I want, I can differentiate this thing, and all the derivatives only hit the x's, and it still stays to be a nice function. X is nowhere near y. In fact, there's a keeps a distance from y. That's why it's also true of u. Of course, I have 20 more pages of notes. That's not true. I have 2 more pages of notes for what I wanted to say today. No, one and a half more pages of notes. I was going to give Gauss's theorem of the mean, which I think is useful. And I was also going to talk about Green's functions. But now I want to submit this to a vote. Next time, I was counting on talking about the Fourier transform, analysis of the Fourier transform. But I didn't get as far as I wanted to this time. So I had the same vote last week, didn't I? Saying, what should I do this week? So what should we do next week? Should I talk about Green's functions a little bit? Why not? Shall I talk about Gauss's law of mean? Of course, it's a classic thing. And then I'm going to slip in a few more things before I move on to the Fourier transform, if that's okay. Oh, what's the vote? The vote is everyone seemed to agree. Okay, really, really vote. Really vote. Actually, I looked at a few nodding heads, and I agree. I thought it was okay. Who would like me to go to, regardless of what we're doing now in our own train of thought, who would like me to brutally go on and change the subject? All in favor. Who, on the other hand, would like me to very nicely, continuously continue on very interesting information about Laplace's equation? All right. When it's stated that way. Actually, Canada is a very polite country, except election time, I noticed. So there's like a 1 month of panic when everyone's saying bizarre things, and I think in a couple of days it'll go back to normal. Okay, so thanks.